Welcome to Circle of Hearts Radio. Journey with Grandmother Aliyah as she enters her magical world of relics, sacred sites, and ancient crystal skulls. Meet with exciting trailblazer authors and individuals shifting the consciousness of humanity. Send her your questions to be answered on air on her monthly segment, Ask the Oracle. And now your host, Grandmother Aliyah, in the sanctuary on the airwaves on Om Times Radio.
Welcome to Circle of Hearts Radio. It's Aliyah. I was kind of waiting for my guest to call in, and I hope, you know, she does. Otherwise, well, we're going to continue this ourselves. You know, I've done this before, and I'm getting pretty good at ad-libbing. It's an important subject. It's about hospice. And our the guest wrote a beautiful book, Peaceful Passages, in which she describes some of the experiences people go through. And she's 20 years as RN in this particular field. And she's an absolutely beautiful woman. So who knows, maybe something had happened and professionally she needed to be someplace else. So, you know, that's the case because she was very anxious to be here. So we're just going with the flow. It was interesting how I met her. A few months ago, I had another really interesting person on, interesting woman, Colleen Morrow. And her book was Spiritual Telepathy. And when I had told her I was a hospice nurse, you know, before I got sick, she goes, oh, I got to connect you with somebody. And that's how I met Janet. And we talked, and it was like, oh, we're kind of old friends, you know, we just have so many similar experiences. And it's bringing out the subject of death and dying. People are starting to recognize that they have a choice in making choices and, you know, how they leave this world. You know, the death and dying consciousness, death and dying upgrading consciousness now is very popular, and people are saying, you know, I want something different. When I was 15, and that was a long, long time ago, for some odd reason, I got interested in hospice. You know, it must have been a past life or something. It was originally started in England by a group of nurses, and they felt that they could, you know, ease the transition. And I had worked as part of a volunteer group, you know, giving the patients' families a little time to themselves and the need to go to the store or just sitting by, you know, the patient, keeping them company. And then when I got into nursing and I was doing some clinicals in the hospital, I noticed that anybody that was transitioning, they put them off in this room by themselves. It was so cold and so upsetting. And I go, this is not right. I mean, you know, some of the staff would just pass by, you know, looking and saying, oh, he's still here. Okay, so, you know, awful. Nothing we can do for him. And I found that very, very upsetting. So I got into home care. And there was hospice there, and that's where I got more involved, and I learned a great deal from the patients, from the families, and I started to realize that death has such a fearful connotation, and I understand it because it brings so much emotions of loss. And it's not an easy thing, but, you know, as we're all growing spiritually, I think we're trying to see that these life cycles in a whole broader range, and that birth is a joyful event. It's the incarnation of a soul into the physical vessel, into a family, and that soul then begins to work through the, you know, the life choices and contracts that it designed with other souls prior to incarnation. And sometimes in those challenges, you know, for whatever reason, it was designed of illness. And I think the challenge was pretty much to figure out, to empower the person, to have the person start to see the core issue involved, because disease is an emotional reaction to the body. And sometimes it's cumulative. Sometimes it's cumulative during many lifetimes. And when we start to see it as part of the life journey that the soul chose, then we start to be able to say, well, how, well, my work is done in this, on this planet, on this earth. How do I want to leave? Do I want to leave in certain circumstances? Do I want to leave in a hospital setting? Do I want to leave around my family? Many indigenous cultures and old cultures, which, you know, they surrounded their loved ones, and it was like a collaborative effort. And this, I believe, was the beginning, or what hospice is based on. People making a choice, people being among the ones they, you know, loved ones around them. And I'm trying to get my thoughts, hoping Janet calls in. It's a very, very special experience. And it's it takes a little getting used to, purely because you have to reorientate your thinking. You have to not think of, oh, of all, you know, the body's leaving, the, you know, all these things that we associate with death. As Lois Hayes produced the idea of the stages of grief. When a person's sick, they go through these stages themselves, even prior to their own transition. Everything is a process, a cycle. But when people are involved in hospice, and even family-wise, then it's supportive. It's the actual scenario is very calming. And as people learn more, you know, I haven't been in the program for so many years, and that's why I was anxious to have Janet in there, that, you know, it has been so updated that it, just like in birth, people have gone back to the natural way of birthing in water or having the family around them. So when the soul incarnates into the physical, it's the birth within its family. You know, it's a joyful group experience. And with hospice, it's a rebirthing into spirit. And the, you know, in the stages of illness and what actually happens to the physical body is a slowly leaving. And it's gentle. People will say, well, the person's in pain. Many times the person has truly, the soul has left prior, and the body is just shutting down. Now, I know this is not the most exciting subject we ever talked about, but once you start to see things with a little bit different, it takes some of the fear out of the personal experience, and you're realizing as it is a soul choice. It is so. As your soul chooses to be born, your soul can now choose, when its work is done, how to leave. It really is. From all the experiences I've seen, it is a choice. It's not just, well, I'm here, I'm going to suffer, and I'm going to go. It really is a slow, gradual release, and that's what the program of hospice brings. It's very supportive for both the person who's transitioning, and it's very supportive to the family, you know, who's being involved too. It takes away the abruptness. Like I said, many souls choose many different ways of departing, but today we're just talking really about the hospice program to take some of the fear and the misunderstanding out, and that really, you know, what is going on? Because not unless you've had a family member who has slowly transitioned, the average person stays away. They're saying, I can't deal with this. And that's very normal. It's not judgmental. But the more you understand and the more you look at it, a little bit different. It's not as painful, because then we're starting to react to things and see things on a soul level, not as, you know, being on this planet and, you know, what is happening and, you know, victims and loss of choices. So hospice is really a program that's helping people to leave under their own terms. And the expansion of that is also this new dying, death by choice movement of people who are very seriously ill, saying, well, I want to be able to leave when I want to leave. Okay, we'll come back.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. OM Times. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've messed up your daughter's haircut. Do you A, get spiritual?
Mom, where's the mirror?
Beauty is within. Oh.
B, find the positives.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or C, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have to.
Twinsies!
I kinda love it. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Well, I'm back, and I'm gathering my thoughts here. I sent a note to Janet. Like I said, she's far more up-to-date on this, and I'm just figuring something happened. But we're going to continue on this subject, because it really is an important subject, especially last year when we saw so many people all of a sudden leaving the planet. I mean, Just even the experience of Carrie Fisher and Debbie Fisher. Hey,
Linda,
Janet.
There was a wrong number on the email. I'm so sorry. I was so looking forward to this.
Oh, well, that's okay. That's my fault. You know, I'm great at being dyslexic at times.
That's all that's important.
Like I had given a little bit of background, mentioned your book. Now I'd like everybody to introduce Janet. Leave it to me to follow that. But, oh, well, that's part of my brain process. But anyway, Janet, like I said, I want people to read your book, to experience it for themselves. But let's get beyond the book. The book is Peaceful Passages, and in the last quarter she'll tell you where you can get it. I try to give a little bit of background on hospice, you know, from what I remembered. How did you get into it?
Well, I was working as a nurse in long-term care, and I was unfulfilled only because of the fact that I really needed a relationship with my patients and the families. And there's such a hectic pace in long-term care with heavy caseloads that I wasn't getting that. And I saw a hospice nurse coming in and spending the amount of time she wanted with her patients, being able to give herself and her heart and her time. And I was drawn to it immediately for that. And that's how it began for me. The book itself, Linda, came from a journal that I was keeping for myself because I did find it hard to process my own grief. The patients that we get, none of them are going to live. They're all terminal. Might be days, might be weeks, might be months or longer. But I began to feel overload on, you know, losing every patient I had. So I started a journal called Gone to Heaven, and that is where the stories came from for the book.
Yeah, they're beautiful. I read them. I cried. I related, you know, the whole thing. That's why anybody that has a family member that, you know, is sick, that, you know, is terminal, really, get Jenna's book. It's beautiful. It's very healing, you know, because I, in the beginning, tried to get people to understand that as we look at the soul journey, a soul chooses to birth into a physical vessel. And people are coming around to, well, let's do this as a group. Let, you know, get out of the hospital setting.
Right,
and it's very
right. Well, you know, I
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I tried to have three threads to the book because some people were going to read it for practical reasons. What if you get called upon to care for somebody that's in hospice that's terminally ill or you yourself? So part of it was clinical about the mind-body aspects of the dying process. Part was what hospice actually does. There is still a lot of misconceptions, and it's hard for families to get the word death on the table. The third aspect, the most important aspect to me, actually, was the spiritual aspect of what can be experienced not only by the person who is passing from this world, but by the people that are surrounding them if they're open, if they stay open and aware and comfortable with the process. There's so much to be seen and heard.
And it's really a gift. I know the first time myself, I just pretty much, you know, the families with, you know, the patient. And you can see, like I said, my crazy brain, if I can just screw this number up, no, you can't tell me which names. But the patient, when it's near the end, there are very milestone signs that we see. And one of them is a particular type of breathing. Besides the shutting down of the body fluids and circulation stuff, it's a breathing pattern. And it reminds you so much of labor. Like when a woman goes into labor, how they start, you know, breathing in a particular pattern, you know, to, you know, help push the baby out.
Right.
And
the
person that's leaving, they start this type of breathing, and I equate it to the birthing into spirit. You know, they're knocking at the door. I'm ready.
I completely agree with that, and there is a lot of likening of the death process, the dying process, with the birth process, and hospice nurses or hospice staff are sometimes called midwives of the soul for that very reason. And I know there are the physical signs that we're used to and that we can read about and understand as the body is leaving, but there are so many other things that you can see, and if you can't see, you may hear or sense with the heart. And you don't have to have any special gifts to be able to see sort of a little wisp kind of as the soul leaves the body. You don't have to have a special gift to be able to see sort of a violet aura color around a body that's getting to leave. And you can often feel a presence in the room. And I think that if we get more comfortable with death and dying and being present is key, that we can experience those things, and then you lose your fear of death because you see the beauty and the sanctity of it.
And one of the, if we're getting into spirituality, there's so much to talk about. You're going to have to come back. This time, obviously, you've got the right number.
I'd love to.
Is at some points, I mean, even people who seemingly are comatose, they'll open their eyes.
Yes.
They'll talk to you, and they'll look around as if they're seeing somebody. And sometimes another sign that I notice, they'll suddenly sit up, like they're trying to get out of bed. They're trying to go to someplace or reach for somebody, and they're happy.
Yeah,
you
that
know.
Happens a lot, and there's a lot of symbolic language as well that people will start talking about a journey, about leaving. They might say something that sounds like a confusion or hallucination. They might say, you know, has the ship pulled into the harbor, or is the taxi waiting for me? But they're talking about leaving in a symbolic way because it's difficult sometimes to say, I'm leaving, permanently leaving. And so a lot of times I'll tell family members, listen for cues about leaving. They'll talk about a trip or a suitcase or about wanting to go or I have to get somewhere, and that's exactly what they're talking about. And it helps to understand that so that you can give the appropriate response. You don't want to say, no, there's no ship because there's no harbor. You don't want to say, we don't have your brown suitcase anymore. You want to be able to validate what they're saying and tell them, it's okay. The ship will be here when you're ready. The taxi will be here. We've got your suitcase packed. Those are the appropriate things to say, and it helps to know that so that you don't delay somebody's leaving because they think the people around them aren't ready.
I just personally know is people believe that everything is a hallucination. Oh, it's the drugs. Now, I agree that some of the pain meds, they lift the patient out of a sense of clarity. When I had my brain tumor, you know, and interesting people, so does Janet.
Yes, that's
what
that's
said,
right.
Little friends here. they gave me Demerol, and I'm sitting there, I'm talking to people, and everybody's looking at me, oh, you know, this lady's really out of it here. And they treat the patient different, but what it's doing for the patient is taking them almost not above their body, above all that's going on in them. And when people see it, they go, oh, well, the doctor says she's hallucinating. People, they're not hallucinating. They're seeing beyond, and they're getting ready, and they're happy. This is not horrible.
They're communicating on another level, in other words.
Yeah. And I just noticed, you know, when I was doing hospice nursing and I was kidding Jan, my husband would say, you know, a nurse could work in when your patients die. And, you know, sometimes if you got into that, sometimes, you know, and I know you probably are, you're very sensitive and you want to help the family. I mean, they cried, I cried.
Oh, of course. You're never going to get away with not crying, but you know what? They're a soul that you're losing too, because it's somebody you care for and cared about. And something interesting, Linda, I think, is that people also need to know that this isn't just with human beings. I have a great story, but now we're not going to have enough time, about how animals sometimes, they'll show their spirit to you. And
Yeah, you'll definitely have to do that, because what is interesting, a few months ago, I lost one of my pups suddenly. And no matter being very clairvoyant, and, you know, sometimes I think I'm in tune with things, I ain't seen nothing. My other pup, you know, kept on staring at this pup, at, you know, her sister, and, you know, it's like, okay, something's not right here, and then I'm going la, 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 all over the place. I'm not seeing it. All the signs were there. So that's why it's very interesting, because I know a lot of people have lost their you know, dear animal friends. You know, people, if they could be aware of what's going on, I think it'd be very helpful for them.
Yeah, that's so, you know, is to be open and to be aware and to kind of listen and watch and see what's happening. I think we're wringing our hands sometimes, and our mind is befuddled a little bit with the fact that we're losing somebody, and what do I need to do, and what is this going to look like, and, you know, am I going to be okay? And we're missing the beauty. We're missing the sacredness of it, and there is so much to be experienced.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, I know we're heading toward break, but, I mean, this could be a whole subject in itself. Because, I mean, this was the lesson I was taught the hard way. And I find myself being more consciously aware of things and, you know, trying to, you know, a little bit more open communication with the animal world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people, like I said, I would never equate, honestly, Jen, I would never equate this with animals. Don't ask me why. Maybe I'm such a blockhead at times. But this was one of my lessons. So, you know, I know after break, this is, I'm definitely glad you brought, you know, this part up. And then we'll get to some of the signs for people to see. You know, just to have an overview of kind of what's going on. And I think this actually equates to the animal world, too. It's very parallel. Once you kind of understand one, you understand the other.
Absolutely. Any living thing that has a death, there's going to be something that you can intuit, see, hear, or feel about that energy leaving. It's just, it's the way of the world. It's energy. And not that energy ever really goes away, but it leaves a living body no matter what that body is. And if you can be in tune to that, it's the closest connection that I can feel to God Creator for me is to be doing this work and to be working with death and dying.
Yeah, and it's I think, like I had kids you about being a trailblazer author. No, I mean seriously, people need to see this aspect, and once they can see it a little differently, it takes some of that terrible fear away. It's part of the healing process. Understanding.
Absolutely.
So that's why
Yeah, even afterwards, you know, I'll tell the family members, you watch carefully. Okay, we done?
We'll continue.
Okay.
Real Conscious Connection, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at AscendingHearts.com. And change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello. Join us, Lisa Berry and Michelle Carter, every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for the Mindset Makeover, What's Possible? Get ready to become present, clear, and unstuck, and start living fully, led by your heart. While you listen and feel this transformation through vibration of word, sound, and song, you'll open up to what's possible and experience your shift.
Hey, this is Reva McIntyre, and I wanted to talk to you about a serious problem right here in our own backyard. Did you know that there are nearly 16 million kids struggling with hunger in America? That's why the Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks collects surplus food, engaging their communities in solving hunger and giving hope to hungry kids and their families. But they need your help. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Well, Janet, I'm going to let you just go for it. I want you to get in as much as you can. Okay.
What I was going to say was that, you know, I tell families, too, after the death occurs, watch carefully, because very often there will be a very specific sign from mom, dad, whoever that person was that passed, just telling you either that they're okay, they're thinking about you, you know, they've left a little bit of themselves behind. I have several stories like that in the book, but there's also one about, I have a patient whose husband was a coin collector, primarily pennies, and he's been gone for several years, but she finds pennies on her toilet. She lives alone. Pennies on her toilet seat in the morning. She finds pennies in her sink. She finds pennies sitting on her dashboard in her car, and she doesn't live with anybody, but this has been going on routinely, maybe every few months since he passed. They might not be quite as obvious signs, but most people will call me or email me and say, I got my sign. But part of that is believing that it could happen, and part of it is just staying open to receiving. I guess you would just call it receiving. I don't know how much time I have. Can I tell a story about specific animals?
You got a good about 15 minutes and can spill
good
into, you know, the last part too.
Yeah, well, I'll tell a story specifically about an animal that happened to me about 3 years ago. It was New Year's Eve day, and we were driving through Wisconsin. We were going about 65 miles an hour, and we hit two deer. They were running adjacent to each other, and we hit one and hit it broadside. The other one got hit by that deer because it was on the other side of it. That one loped off, but the one we hit went airborne, went into a ditch. It was just, it was an awful situation. It was, you know, there was snow, and I could see that she was very broken and wasn't moving but still alive, and I went down into the ditch. And I'm a therapeutic touch practitioner, so I was doing therapeutic touch and petting her and just talking to her and thanking her as she was leaving. And I felt another deer come up behind me, and I could hear that kind of huffing, you know, that little snorting noise that they make,
mm-hmm.
and hear it pawing the ground. And I continued doing what I was doing. I didn't turn around. I was focused on the deer that was hurt. And just as she took her last breath, I heard the one behind me kind of stamp off. And I looked over my shoulder, and it was running across the hill. And I wondered why, instead of the dark gray-brown that white-tailed deer are at that time of year, it was more the summer color, the golden red that white-tailed deer are. And I watched it go over the hill, and the one that was in front of me had passed. And I went up on the road, and I said to my husband, how close did that deer get to me? I felt like it was right over my shoulder. And he said, I was watching you the whole time. There wasn't a deer. There was no other deer. And so I really believe that deer spirit had left its body, and as she stopped breathing, it took off for greener pastures, whatever it was. But I know that there was a deer behind me. I could hear all its little animal noises, and, you know, that's one specific story. But with our animal cats and dogs and other things, just be aware that can happen, you know. Another fascinating thing.
And one thing I just want to know, I want to get in, and I know a lot of people are concerned about, usually when it's a hospice situation, people are in pain. And even with animals, I have the sense that they leave, just like that's what's giving my, after this story, I believe they leave before some of the reactions that you see happen. What do you think?
I think that's entirely possible. Of course, we can't know. But I think that the spirit does come out of the body before the body actually takes its last breath and is a person that's deceased or a pet that's deceased. And often when I'm caring for a patient, at the very last moments or hours, I often feel a presence over my left shoulder, almost like a hand on my left shoulder. And whether that's their spirit has already sort of risen out and is waiting, I don't know. But I do believe that that's entirely possible. One of the things that I wanted to clarify, too, about hospice care is that, you know, that's the job of hospice nurses, is to make sure that symptoms are managed and that's anything, particularly pain. but that symptoms are managed so that that death can be as peaceful and as focused as possible. Because I'll tell you what, when your body is in pain, that's when people linger. They don't let go because they're attached to that pain. Once you can get rid of the pain and they can just focus on what they need to do to leave, that's when you see things start to happen. And another thing about that is approaching the whole mind-body-spirit connection there is if their mind and their spirit is freed up, their body is often very much at ease. And so it's important to make sure that we're meeting all the needs of all three of those so that they can focus on, what do I need to do to leave my body? How do I do this? I've never done this before. Well, we've probably done it before many times in other lives, but in this life, how do I do that? How do I leave? How do I let go?
And how do I leave, you know, the family? And because I noticed more people a few years ago when I was doing it, they would get to the point, okay, you know, go to the light, you know, go, you know, whatever they felt the need to say. So that's why I feel education is so well needed, so that people see this almost like it's a ceremony, a bon voyage type of thing. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it.
Yeah, you're right too, Linda, about giving permission, because we all have an emotional connection to somebody and sometimes to a lot of somebodies. And it really is hard to talk about death with the people that you're leaving because you don't want to hurt them. And it's also hard, it's difficult to leave when you're surrounded by that. You know, everybody says, every family says, well, I don't want mom or dad or so-and-so to die alone. And I don't believe anybody dies alone, even if there's nobody in the room with them, no physical human being. But sometimes they need the focus of not having somebody at the bedside distracting them from their task of what they need to do, so that they can do that. And a lot of deaths happen at night, during the night, probably because it's dark and quiet. And a lot of people will die alone, even if it's just that their husband, who's been sitting there for 3 days, got up to go to the bathroom or went home to take a shower for a few minutes or whatever that might be. It's almost as if some people wait for that moment to be able to go, to be able to focus enough and not be sort of attached by that umbilical cord of attachment and love to other people. So I often tell my families, too, you know, give her choices. Be there with her, but give her some time alone and tell her, I'm leaving. I won't be back till tomorrow, or I'll be back in an hour, and let them choose what they need for their dying experience. Because, really, we want to make it easy for them. This is their experience. We'll have our own. We want to do the right thing by them.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because I've seen a lot. But I know you probably see a lot. Someone will just, like you said, you know, oh, I just stepped out of the room. That actually happened with my husband's aunt. She was in the hospital room. And this woman was a hypochondriac all her life, all right? And at one point, when she was in for some breathing and heart problems, you know, the doctor said, oh, you got cancer. And his aunt just looked at him, and the family just went out, you know, to she says, go get some lunch, and they did. And just, this is the way his aunt was. When they came back, she was gone. She goes, I'm doing this my way.
You know, the some people that I've told that to, tell them, you know, give them a chance to be by themselves for a little while. I've had other family members burst into tears and say, do you know, 25 years ago my mom died, and I've been beating myself up ever since then because I left her for an hour, and that's when she went. She said, do you mean to tell me I helped her go? And it's a huge relief for people to know that they didn't make a mistake, they didn't leave at an inopportune time. They left at an opportune time for the person that was dying, and they took their chance. They took their chance to go at that time. So it happens quite often. I would say it happens more than half the time that people will wait for the time that they're alone, even if it's just for a few moments or a couple of hours. So we know that that's what they chose. And I can sort of imagine it, that if you're feeling very connected to the people that are in the room and already missing you and already mourning in a certain way, that it would be hard to leave. You don't want to let anybody down, you know.
No, that's why this whole subject, well, it's always been dear to my heart, even though people thought it was a lot oddball. But I really believe that education and people realizing this is a soul choice, that as they decided who they're going to choose their parents and how they're going to come in and what country they're going to live in, and, you know, the whole nine yards of their journey mapped out, that they will decide when my work is done, okay, this is how I'm going to go. It's all part of the growth and all the lessons. And I hate the word death. I wish there was another word that we could instill. Transition's good, but I don't know if people quite get that yet.
I think it's becoming a little bit more accepted, transition, and even death. I think that the historical association of the word is, it makes it kind of scary and bad. And in one of my talks, I go through historically from the homestead times, when everything happened at home, all the births and all the deaths and all the sicknesses and everything else happened at the homestead. And then we got away from that. And in the 1930s, when my mom was born, she lost both of her parents very young, before she was 10, you weren't allowed to mention that person again. They took all the pictures down. It was like they never existed. And so death got to be this big, scary thing, because if we can't talk about it, it must be really bad. And we have come a long way in talking about it. And I think over the last, well, let's just say 20 years ago when I started in hospice, there were probably 10 hospices in Chicago. 10 years ago, there might have been 100. And now there's probably, I'm going to guess, 300 or 400 hospices, independent hospices, just in the Chicago area. So people are accepting and understanding and being educated. You're right about the education part, that they can be walked through this process. And once you do it with one person, it's easier every time along.
Okay, we'll be back with Jenna. I'm so glad you came.
Thank you.
Feed your soul with Waves of Consciousness on OM Times Radio. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for School Girls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
People are always looking to invest in a good opportunity. So what if you could invest in the future of kids, like a stock? Not the kind of stock that's about making money, but a stock for social change called Better Futures. With your investment, it helps students like me go to college. My name is Charles, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Before we get any further, I want Jenna to have her tell you about her book, where she can get it, where you can contact her, and some of the talks that she does. Because it's just not so much about, you know, the one experience. This is she kind of pulls it all together about the spiritual and the physical aspects of death. And I think she'd be very, as an educator, it's great. So I'm handing it over, Jenna.
Okay, all right. Well, the book is called, it's got a longer title, it's Peaceful Passages, but it's also Peaceful Passages, A Hospice Nurse's Stories of Dying Well. And that can give you an idea that this isn't a sad book, this is a happy book, Dying Well. It was published October 1st, 2015 by Quest Publishing, and you can find it on Amazon or the Quest book site. It's also an e-book. Barnes & Noble, if you Google the name, it'll come up with a lot of different sellers for it. I've done several international webcasts at the Theosophical Society in America, and I have one called Living with Dying, which was done March 2016, and then one called The Essence of Healing, the same mind-body-spirit discussion, and that was October 2016. So it's at the Theosophical Society in America website on their programs, and it's also on YouTube. And if anybody has questions, concerns, comments that they would like to contact me, they can contact me at janet@janetweir.com. That's my website, janet@janetweir.com.
And your last name, W-E-H-R, right?
W-E-H-R, correct.
Yay, I got something right today. I feel so bad.
Oh, well, that's okay.
I think this is such an important subject because even just looking at last year, people are so inundated with the subject in its many, many, many forms. That I think they start to, we see in the world, people start realizing that, you know, these are soul scenarios, and we have some choices in healing. You have choices, and in dying, you have choices, and in birthing, you have choices. You're not out there, you know, not everything's happening to you. You have a choice in so many things. And it's something with inside of you. If I listen for my own operation, you know, they told my family, I have to get it, you know, it's going to be in a nursing home as a vegetable. And I'm going, no, I'm not making that choice. Here I am.
Here I
am. So, no, seriously, I stress the idea of choices. It is a soul choice. It's not because somebody says, oh, well, you've got so many months. I've seen people turn things around, and that's what I'd like people to understand, you know,
this whole life journey.
Mm-hmm.
And with the dying process, you know, what I'd like to say, the bonus, the beautiful gift that I've been given working with the dying is I'm not afraid to die. I've seen the good stuff. I've seen the beautiful things that happen, and I don't have any fear of it. But you know what we can do to help ourselves is we can start reading about it, start talking about it, start thinking about it in relationship to yourself or to other people. It's like anything else. If you wait to get the education and the information until you need it, it's too late. It's too late. It's a process like anything else. And so starting to think about it and make that word death and dying part of your vocabulary, part of your thinking, part of what you meditate on maybe, is going to make it so much easier either at the end of your own life or when you go to help somebody else through. And that's the best advice I can give is familiarize yourself with death, get comfortable with it, get it to be a friend, and then it's not going to be so frightening and scary when the time comes. And there's so many ways now because we know how much is on the internet. You can read about it. You can listen in on programs such as this about it, but familiarize yourself with it. It's the best thing you can do for yourself. We're all going to go. You know, we don't know when, but
yeah.
The best advice is get ready for it.
And to take fear out of it, really, because I know even after I had my operation and I went through one period where I guess things weren't going good. And, you know, physically, my spirit left.
Yeah.
And it just happens. And there's many people have stories, and I came back and I'm going, that wasn't that bad.
Something to look forward to, maybe. You know, you made the parallel, Linda, between birth and death. And think about all the preparations we do for the birth of a baby. I mean, the mother herself, she picks out the music she wants. She's got an outfit for the baby packed, an outfit for herself. She's chosen her doctor, her hospital, the way she wants to birth the baby. All these preparations we make for birth, and what do? We turn our back and dig in our heels for death. We can do the same thing. It's just as important. Plan your own funeral. Pick out your own music today, even if it might change. You know, pick it out. Write it down. Tell somebody what it is.
It really is education, and there's so many beautiful things to make the process easier, sometimes with aromatherapy, of putting flowers around, of making the room joyful instead of the sick room, you know, music, you know, many choices. And I got a feeling you and I are going to collaborate on something. Not sure what yet, but...
Oh, that would be fun. That would be fun. I'd like that, Linda.
It's like, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but, you know, I'm seeing it between the animals and this whole process of people understanding. And it's, you know, we change our perception. So, you know, I'm really glad you got back on.
I am
like,
too.
I'm glad, like I said, so watch out for Janet and I. We'll come up and do something. Who knows? I'm always finding some other stuff to do.
Well, I think any work that's done mindfully is God's work. And hospice is certainly a calling, and it's God's work, and it's very humbling because I'm getting back way more than I'm giving every single time, and I think God makes sure of that so that hospice workers and other people in other occupations don't burn out. You know, you get something back. It fills your heart. It fills your soul. And you want to continue to do it for that good feedback and because you know that you're making a difference in someone's life.
And you're really helping the families plus the patient itself. It's not that you're just taking care of them. You almost become part of the family. I mean, when something happens, the family doesn't want to let you go.
That's
I don't know
very
if you found
true.
That
and
out.
And the nurse, and the nurse doesn't want to let the family go either. And that's, you know, that's the great thing.
Yeah.
I think not only you lose the patient that you knew you were going to lose. We know in the beginning that we're going to lose these patients, but you may have been a guest in their home 3 times a week for a year, and then you lose that family too. And it's probably better for most people if you kind of back away from that because you're a little bit of a reminder of a sad time for them and you've finished your work and you've washed your hands and you've kind of walked away. It doesn't mean it ever leaves your heart, ever, ever.
And I think people need to realize that because, you know, that's part of our training, that when it's over, like you said, you got to walk away. Even though you go, how can I do this? How can I, you know, just walk away from them? But it really is best, and I think the families think, she didn't care anyhow. That's not true.
They need to be able to move on. Yeah, that's it. And I think they understand that, too, that you were there for that journey with them. And when the journey is done, then the relationship is kind of done. Although I still get Christmas cards from patients I had 17 years ago in hospice from their family. They still send a Christmas card and say, we'll never forget you. That feels pretty good, you know. That's part of that beautiful feedback.
And honestly, with the subject of passing, I know we're going to end up real quickly, but, you know, also to people to realize the spirituality, because when people approach mediums and stuff, what you're kind of saying, okay, well, death is just another dimension. A person's still with us. I mean, that's a whole thing to incorporate in this whole thing that's coming to my head that we're going to be doing.
Okay, very good. You write down your notes and I'll write down mine and we'll put them together.
So please, everybody, if you really are in this situation, you know, either can find ways of contacting Janet. She's on Facebook too. And also her book. It really helps. It gives you a sense of peace, and I think it's so hard for the families. And, you know, because they go through the roughest part. The person that's leaving, they made their choice. They said, you know, I pretty much accomplished what I needed to accomplish now. Now I just, you know, with the full circle happen again, you know.
Yeah.
But the families are the ones that, you know, are really hurting. And I think once they understand it, it's going to be a little bit easier on them. So this hour goes too quickly, and of course it goes too quickly when the first 15 minutes the poor person gets on the phone. I don't know.
Something was preventing us from getting together, but it's okay. It all worked out the way it needed to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I realize about it. It's at the weirdest times I get dyslexic. I think I'm going to stamp that thing on me.
Thank you, Linda.
Janet. We had fun on a very, very serious talk. And I'm going to get Janet back. And, you know, everybody watch out for our new adventures together. Until next week, thank you and many, many blessings. Thanks, Janet.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.